shows across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, The Equalizer 2, Unfriended Dark Web, and Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot, which is the only one that's not a sequel. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Ready Player One. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies, as long as you're not a Holocaust denier. And you can find me also on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is a little bit of an I told you so. I reported a couple weeks ago that Scarlett Johansson was going to be considered, or actually was attached, to this film about a transgender man, and she was going to be playing the transgender man. But there was a huge reaction by the transgender community, and a lot of people who were concerned and expressing problems with the fact that Scarlett Johansson, a cisgender woman, would be playing a transgender man. And I remember saying, look, that's all well and good, and I understand the thoughts on that. I understand that you would want the transgender community to be acting in a role like that. Why not? There are transgender actors and actresses out there. And I went and I named a couple of them. But one of the things I said is, I said, here's the problem. This was not necessarily a gender decision. This was a business decision. Scarlett Johansson has a certain equity to her name. You attach her to a film, you're going to get funding. Well, she kind of pushed back on it and pointed out that people like Felicity Huffman and Jeffrey Tambor and Jared Leto had played transgender people before, much to critical acclaim, and it's sort of like, well, why can't she? And I think it's a little bit of a sore spot because she was in Ghost in the Shell, and the original character was Japanese in that movie, even though they explained it in the film, and it's the same director for that as this movie. And then she pulled out. She said, I'm not going to do this. It's not worth the pain. It's not worth the criticism. And she sided with the people who were complaining about it. You know, and they're like, yay, we won. But here's the problem. There's a little bit of buzz that this thing may not end up getting made at all now. And it's going to have that baggage with it that it can't not cast a transgender actor. The problem is, when you make an independent film, there is a challenge to get money. Doesn't matter who you are as a director. You may have just directed Ghost in the Shell. But if you don't have an actor or actress that you can put a name on a poster or just refer to it as the new Scarlett Johansson movie, you lose a lot of equity and you potentially lose funding. And that's exactly what happened here. And I said, that's the problem. You're pushing so hard to get this end result, not realizing what's happening. And they're just plain and simple. There just aren't any transgender actors out there that have the same level that Scarlett Johansson. There are very few cisgender actors out there that have the level of Scarlett Johansson. And now, not only do you not have her as a star, so you lost all that equity, no other cisgender actor or actress is going to step in because of the blowback. So in effect, you killed the deal. And that's one of the problems with sort of like societal causes and social causes. Even if they're all for a good cause, you can be shooting yourself in the foot. So here, this is a great cautionary tale in internet outrage culture right now. Two other little pieces of news is Denis Villeneuve is developing the new Dune movie, which should be shooting next year, early next year. They've got Timothy, whatever his last name is. I pronounce it, it's like a French name, but I pronounce it as overrated guy. He was in Call Me By Your Name and Lady Bird. He's in talks to be in that movie, I'm assuming, under the character of Paul Atreides. You know, I love Denis Villeneuve. I think he's a brilliant director. I'm a little nervous about his because I'm that one guy out there who absolutely loves David Lynch's version of Dune. And after Jodorowsky's Dune, I think that they're going to try and make it too much like that. And I think it's going to be inaccessible. Completely inaccessible to the mainstream. And they're going to pump a ton of money into it and realize that the book doesn't translate to a mainstream blockbuster. It's not Star Wars. It's like Blade Runner 2049. It's a brilliant movie, but it wasn't a mainstream film. The first Blade Runner wasn't a mainstream film, for that matter. Speaking of mainstream films, we've got a new RoboCop movie coming out. Neil Blomkamp's going to be directing that, apparently. Now it's going to be a sequel, retroconning from the first one, and it'll totally ignore all the stuff in between. And I'm like, they already made a terrible remake of it. Now they're going to do a sequel. I mean, I guess is Peter Weller going to be back? I mean, does RoboCop age? I don't know. The big news on this is it's going to be rated R, and I guess that's great for somebody who, you know, if you're one of those people who refuses to watch Live Free or Die Hard in the series because it was rated PG-13, that's great news for you. But most people in America don't care about that stuff. This RoboCop sequel, reboot, slash whatever it is, this could be a huge mess. Either remake it or just remake it, reboot it from the beginning. But this is going to be like called, I bet you it'll be called RoboCop, so now we're going to have three movies called RoboCop. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Boy Erased, which comes out on November 2nd.
I love you, but we cannot see a way that you can live under this roof if you're going to fundamentally go against the grain of our beliefs. Jared, tell me the truth. That's all.
I think about men.
Your parents signed you up for a program to fix you, but Jared, you are a perfectly normal, very healthy teenage boy. They're gonna do things for you.
As you can tell, we're heading into award season in the next couple months. I mean, not in August and September, because usually those movies are kind of garbage. But once you start getting into October, November, December, that's where you're getting the award films, and you're going to start getting the ones that are significant or inspirational. Now, this one looks kind of interesting. It's directed by Joel Edgerton, who came on really strong with A Gift a couple years ago, and it tackles a somewhat controversial subject of gay conversion therapy. This is going to be interesting because I think Edgerton has a real steady hand in dealing with things, especially for something. I mean, let's face it, this has, there's no basis in actual psychological medicine for gay conversion therapy. I mean, you can sit there and say, oh, there is, and you can have proof that's circular in arguments, but it's not. I mean, it's the American Medical Association doesn't recognize it. The Psychiatric Association doesn't recognize it. And, I think this is an important thing because this is not a good thing to do to somebody, and it does show the conflicts within the family. I'm curious to see how Edgerton handles it, because it'd be very easy to demonize the parents in this, and especially the gay conversion therapy team, but I think you also have to look at it as humans thinking they're doing the right things, even though they're not. This one I'm looking forward to. I'm curious to see what comes out of it. The next one I want to talk about really quickly is Welcome to Merwin, opens on December 12th.
I heard what happened to you.
Five of them jumped him. To miraculously survived.
You taking your meds?
I got beaten within an inch of my life for no reason.
One foot in front of the other. You got it, Mark.
Embrace the pain.
But I've created a world where I can heal.
What is all of this?
Welcome to Marwin. It's my art installation.
This is a Robert Zemeckis film, and it's based on the original movie. It's a documentary called Merwin Qual, which I didn't see, and it's about a guy who got PTSD from being almost beaten to death, and he lost his memory and frames the real world with this backyard sculpture that he did, which is kind of an art installation. The big problem with this one is fascinating the story is, and I haven't seen that documentary. I probably will before this comes out, but Zemeckis can get really corny sometimes, and oh god, I don't know. I mean, this could really lay it on thick, and that's what I'm worried about, that it's going to be just overly cheesy and schmaltzy when it's, you know, it's kind of, I get a feeling of that, what was that Will Smith movie where he was meeting death and love and the different emotions that he wrote to after the death of his kid. This could fall into that level of corniness. Anyways, that is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Equalizer 2 and Unfriended Dark Web. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump right into the movie reviews with the first sequel of the weekend, and that is The Equalizer 2. Denzel Washington returns as a mild-mannered man with special skills bent on getting revenge on the people who killed his friend.
Robert, I'm your only friend. It's great you're helping all these random people and everything. But stay off the radar. Something happened to one of ours. So I'm obligated to look into it.
Thought you were retired.
Oh, I am. Just like your dad.
They knew what floor she was on.
They're tying up loose ends.
Exactly.
I was your partner for 7 years, Mac. It's a mistake to go to war with him.
They're going to war with me.
I was quite a fan of the first Equalizer. I actually thought it was pretty good. I remember the old TV show with the guy from The Wicker Man. My mom wouldn't let me watch it because it was a sort of this vigilante series. Even though the guy did good things, I mean, you were dealing with violent crimes in the TV show, so she wouldn't let me watch that show. I always thought that he was violent, and he probably was. And I'm a big fan of Antoine Fuqua, and he's done some bad movies. Don't get me wrong; there are some of his that aren't nearly as good as others. But on the whole, I tend to like Fuqua's work. I thought that stuff like Tears of the Sun was really good. I thought the first Equalizer, I thought the Magnificent Seven, which he recently did, was quite good. You know, he works a lot with Denzel Washington, and that's good because they work together. You know, sort of like Spike Lee works a lot with Denzel Washington. So I liked the first Equalizer quite a bit. It kind of was a surprising, energetic action movie. And this one I was kind of looking forward to, but I'll tell you, it's really different. And it's different not in the sense of the character, because the character certainly does feel like it's going the same place. I don't think that they ruin the character or they change the character or anything like that, or even what he does, but it's not an action movie. Don't go in expecting it to be an action movie. There are action sequences. And there are scenes where bullets flying and there are some very violent and visceral moments, but a lot of it's a slow burn. And in a lot of ways, you know, all the stuff you heard in the trailer, a lot of that stuff takes like the first, 45 minutes or even almost an hour to get to the whole point where he's going for revenge. And I kind of respect that. I mean, a lot of times in movies that'll annoy me. A lot of times in films, if it's something that just takes too long to get to the point, I think it's overstaying its welcome. But Fuqua is such a good director that it doesn't come across that way. It just comes across as it's more of a slow burn 70s style action film. You know, something like the original The Mechanic with Charles Bronson. Or The Taking of Pelham 123. You compare like The Taking of Pelham 123 to the remake with Denzel Washington, of course. They're very different movies, and the original from the 70s is it takes its time. It breathes. It's not post MTV generation, post smartphone generation where you got to have constant entertainment happening. You got to take your time and you got to breathe, and you it lays a story out, even though you know where it's going and you can guess all the twists and turns in the film. I really enjoyed that. I liked that a lot, and in that way, it's not a lickety-split action movie. It's not going to compete with, like, Mission Impossible next week. Now, the last half is a little, well, maybe like the last half hour, it gets a little bit almost too paint-by-numbers, and I wasn't a big fan of kind of how it wraps up and how it gets to that third act. But I had enough enjoyment out of the first two acts that I can forgive any foibles that happened in the last, you know, third of the film, or even like 25% of the film. I mean, it Denzel Washington's good in this role, and Denzel Washington kind of plays Denzel Washington, the tough Denzel Washington we've seen in stuff like The Magnificent Seven and Safe House, and these other films that he kind of did more later in life. And Melissa Leo is actually quite good as his friend who is killed. And you know, there's some other good performances in it, but really it's Denzel's movie. But it works. I mean, for an old guy kicking butt. I'd love to see a crossover with him and Liam Neeson, as the character from Taken and The Equalizer. He'd have a great crossover. They're not the same company, but I think that would be an interesting crossover. So still, I'm going to have to say, while it wasn't perfect, I actually kind of liked The Equalizer too. I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next one I want to talk about is Unfriended Dark Web. A group of friends find a laptop, use it on a group video chat, and discover they are the target of a dangerous ring of people.
I got a new laptop.
There's a cyber cafe that I've been working at, and this computer was sitting in the lost and found for the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Hang on, you stole someone's computer?
I didn't steal it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That's messed up.
And I found this folder. It was hidden, and it automatically connects you to this thing.
Dude, this is dark web.
What's dark web?
Part of the internet where no one can track you.
It's all about drugs, illegal IDs, even assassination for hire.
That looked way too real.
I think that is real.
Anyone who knows me and my views of modern horror know that I hate found footage movies. I've always hated found footage movies, except for, I mean, like the first couple ones were okay. You know, like Cloverfield was kind of cool. First Paranormal Activity was cool. The Blair Witch Project was good, even though I almost puked in the movie. Now, this is sort of an offshoot of found footage, where it's all taking place on a computer screen. They did a Modern Family episode like this, and of course, the first Unfriended. I think they've got another movie, Searching, that's coming up with John Cho and Deborah Messing. That one looks like it's all sort of TV screen found footage, but at least it's not the person running around with a video camera. So it does have that same setup that the first Unfriended did. The big difference is, and this to me is a big knock against it, is the first Unfriended, there was something supernatural there. There was something demonic. There was something haunting in these people's group chat because they drove a girl to suicide in that first movie. And in this one, it's just a bunch of hackers. There's no supernatural element to it, so I think that that's a little bit of a sellout. The other problem I have with the movie is the bad guys, the hackers, this subculture that's in the dark web, they're like kind of too powerful, because there's stuff that they pull off in this movie. You're just like, well, you either had to know exactly what was going to happen and prepare forever for it, or you had to wing it and just stumble into something. It doesn't hold water when it's almost impossible to believe that somebody, even with great tools, could do everything that's done in this movie. On top of that, you've got these people who are essentially millennials, or maybe, I guess they're millennials, and they get a laptop. This guy gets a laptop and he starts putting in his passwords and all of his accounts, and he can immediately see that things are linked. And I'm just like, whoa, wait, hold on a second. If you get a stolen laptop or an iPad or an iPhone, you do restore factory settings first. You don't just open it up and start using it and just be like, oh, it's okay. And then there's just way too many things that had to be ignored, even for a horror movie, for this thing to take place. And then on top of that, you've got the guy who found the laptop. He loves this one girl and he wants to keep her safe. And that's the bad guys are like, we're going to kill her if you tell anybody. And so it's one of those, again, that trope in movies where it's like, it doesn't matter what happened. No amount of carnage or death or pain to other people, innocent or not, nothing is too much to keep this one person safe. And that, to me, shows a weakness in character, and that's where it's kind of not well-written. I mean, I'm really conflicted on this one. I'm going to give it a kind of rocks just because I'm feeling nice tonight and generous, and, you know, we got the Mamma Mia sequel coming up in the next segment, so let's balance that one out. So, Unfriended, Dark Web, kind of rocks, just barely.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, and don't worry, he won't get far on foot. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews with more sequels. And that is Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. When Sophia prepares for the opening of a hotel in honor of her dead mother, we flash back to Donna's youth as she finds love in Greece. Mamma Mia.
Tonight, it's a night for celebration.
Come on, let's get this show on the road.
I was told you couldn't come. I'm a spontaneous person.
No, you're not.
No, I'm not.
These are my dads.
It takes three great men to create such a woman.
I never did ask you guys, what happened when you met my mother? Here I go again.
The first Mamma Mia came out 10 years ago. 10 years. I'm surprised that it was that long. I didn't realize it was that long. But yeah, Mamma Mia was 10 years ago. I remember it coming out the same summer as The Dark Knight. I actually saw Mamma Mia. I didn't see it on Broadway, but I bought for my wife like a anniversary or birthday or Christmas present. I bought tickets to go see it in their touring show that came to Columbus. And so we saw the Broadway and Columbus version of it, and it was a great show. I gotta say, it was one of the original good jukebox musicals. I love the ABBA's music, and I love the music that they had in the show, the hits. More on that later. But it was a nice, vibrant, cool show. My son's theater department is going to be putting on their own version of Mamma Mia at the end of the year in the spring. So there's a lot of cool stuff that goes on the Broadway show. The problem with movie adaptations of those is they sometimes stumble and they don't work. I never thought Meryl Streep was good in the role. I didn't think she fit that part. But overall, it was a fun movie. I mean, it worked for what it was. Not as good as the original stage show. And this one, when it came out, when I first saw the trailers, I was like, is this necessary? And I mean, there's plenty of unnecessary movies that I like. And of course, this is coming from a guy who was not a fan of the show. I know I gave a summary of the movie, but I have a hard time encapsulating what the film's about. I mean, she's doing this. Look, any sequel that's premise is we're putting on a party. American Pie did that. I remember listening to the commentary for American Pie 2, and they said, well, you know, the whole thing was, first one was about them losing their virginity. Let's do this next one of them throwing the biggest party ever. And I'm like, that's such a crappy premise. We got to throw a party. I've always hated that there's no purpose to that. It just, I mean, unless you're like an all night party kind of movie, like Superbad or something like that. But this one, there's really no story. There's in terms of, because I said this to my wife, I took her to the screening and as we're coming home, I said, what was the story about? She goes, well, it was about this. And I go, no, that's the premise. She's opening a hotel and all the people are coming. Oh, that's not a plot. That's just a premise. There's no conflict. There's no rising arc and there's no character development. And she's like, oh, well, it was flashing back to her mom when she was out meeting these guys. I go, again, that's a premise. There's no plot to that. There's no character development. The character played by Lily James, who's much easier on the eyes than Meryl Streep is, even in her heyday. But the problem is the character of Don is just this flibberty gibbet who's flopping around, literally squatting on this property in Greece just because it's beautiful and romantic. And the young guy she's with are, but there was nothing to the characters. Nothing really gets achieved. You just wait for her to get pregnant. There's no story. There's no story in this at all. It's all just replaying what you already knew. And then on top of it, it's the music. Everyone's like, oh, the music. Let's go back. Well, you know what? It's all B-sides to ABBA songs. They already mined all the good hits from ABBA for the first movie or the first show. And then you're sitting there watching, oh, that one I recognize. Oh, wait, that's Waterloo. They did that in the first film, didn't they? Oh, wait, that one's good. I like Mamma Mia. Wait, they did Mamma Mia in the first one. So there's like three or four of their hits that are essentially just retreads from the first movie. And then all the other songs are, they're really not that good. There's a reason those weren't the top tier songs they put in the first performance. And then on top of it, I swear to God, there's probably more digital effects in this movie than the Avengers films. They have all these, you know, every single background of the beautiful Mediterranean is some sort of visual effect. And it's like the second season of Glee. Remember that first season of Glee was really sharp and impressive and actually had the music propelling the story. And that's one of the things I thought was impressive about the first Mamma Mia is from the stage play is that they actually took these songs and made them tell the story. Now they just throw in a song. It's like, hey, we're going to have a song break. And they have so many song breaks in this movie. I know everyone's like, oh, it's the same fun and it's just whimsical. I just found it to be boring. There are a couple cute moments. And I think one of the best things in the movie is Julie Waters. I said that about the first film. So I'm going to have to say that Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the first film on the docket that is not a sequel. And that is Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot. Gus Van Sant directs this biopic of controversial cartoonist John Callahan, who was paralyzed after a drunken car accident in the 70s.
So, John, do you want to tell us about your drinking?
Well, I started drinking when I was 13. I liked it a lot, and I never stopped.
This doesn't just go away. You have to fight with it, or you'll die.
Something really profound just happened to me, man.
Aren't you glad you made us?
John doesn't like us.
Well, of course I like you.
You're crazy.
We like you too.
Makes you get to know me.
I'm not a huge fan of Gus Van Sant because I'll never forgive him for what he did to Psycho back in, what, 1996 or something? And I actually haven't seen too many of his movies, but you know he's got roots in these smaller independent films, and this is him kind of going back to that kind of movie. I mean, he's not doing Psycho again. He's doing his own movies. He's doing these smaller, more intimate films. And this one actually has a great cast. I mean, Joaquin Phoenix is good as John Callahan, especially in the acting of a quadriplegic. Which, you know, let me ask you a question. Why is everyone outraged that Scarlett Johansson was going to play a transgender person, but like Dwayne Johnson, it's not outrageous that he was playing an amputee last week in Skyscraper and Joaquin Phoenix is playing a quad in this movie? Why is that not outrageous? Shouldn't they get a quad actor to play this? If we are going to judge by the same yardstick here. But Joaquin Phoenix does a great job. Also doing great jobs, Jack Black has a bit small part, kind of steals the scenes he's in as the guy who gets in the car crash with John Callahan. And then you've got Jonah Hill. Talk about just disappearing into the role. I recognize the voice, but I almost didn't put the face to the voice. Almost, this was almost a transformative type of physical role that you saw like Gary Oldman doing last year in The Darkest Hour. But Jonah Hill plays a sponsor who's got his own set of problems, who's a real interesting character, and he does a great job in it. Now, the movie's basically about this guy's journey from being this alcoholic tooling around town in the 70s to becoming this well-known, very controversial cartoonist. But it doesn't take the standard path you'd see a inspirational movie. You know, this is not like I'm just talking about how Welcome to Marwen might be kind of cheesy and corny. This doesn't get cheesy and corny. It's hard and it's gritty and it's unfriendly at times and it's sloppy and messy the way life really is. And that's kind of a reality to it. And actually, I found it really interesting. I thought it was an interesting perspective. It's a smaller movie. It's one that I don't think everybody's going to go see. But this is one I think keep in mind as we start to roll through award season. This one might pick up some awards. There's some problems with it. It has some anachronisms in it that really bother me because the whole movie takes place in the 70s, but they're making Starbucks jokes. And they made a joke about, there are a comment about Chucky, which was the doll. He doesn't show up until 1988 in the movie Child's Play. So if this takes place in the 70s, you know, Starbucks, I don't even know if Starbucks was founded by then, but it certainly wasn't doing the mass expansion for the jokes. And so they kind of cram it and force things to fit into that mid to late 70s time frame, and they never break out of it, even when it's like the 80s. But still, it's a good movie. It's worth checking out. It's an interesting perspective on John Callahan's life. It kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about what I'm looking forward to hearing coming out of Comic-Con this weekend. Also, the box office and the home cinema roundup featuring an early look at Ready Player One's Blu-ray. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. What's funny about this time of year is it's changed quite a bit for moviegoers, and in particular for geek-type people, nerds and superhero films. Superhero films have become the new blockbusters. They are the gold standard. And as much as everyone says, is there superhero fatigue? You can't tell me that there's superhero fatigue in a summer where you had Avengers Infinity War, and earlier this year you had Black Panther, and then you had Deadpool 2 from different studios, and there's actually a lot of excitement for some of the DC stuff coming out. You can't tell me there's superhero fatigue. There's garbage superhero fatigue, and there's fatigue of stuff that's not made well, but that's like saying that there's a fatigue for high special effects blockbusters. Those have always been around. I mean, since the 70s, when blockbusters were redefined in the 70s with special effects, especially like post Star Wars, and then you had like the original Superman movie in 1978, and moving into the 80s, you can't say that anyone's getting tired of special effects, because there always are special effects. Even heck, Mamma Mia, I mentioned, has way more special effects than it probably needs. So 15, 20 years ago, Comic-Con was still a little bit fringe. And they had big panels, especially 15 years ago. And I actually went there and covered it as one of the few journalists that actually got in and could bring a camera. And we actually got approved earlier before, like even before Mark Hamill did his superhero movie, we were in there with cameras filming it because we had an in with somebody who worked there. You know, over the years, it became suddenly this epicenter of news, and I don't feel the same buzz from this year. I think partly because the window of making things come out is spread. You know, when you got Black Panther coming out in February and becoming the biggest grossing movie of the year, or one of the biggest grossing movies of the year. Last year, I had that happen with Beauty and the Beast. It's no longer just summertime and holidays. And now we've got a lot of other noise in the works. And like 10 years ago, the studios were expecting what's popular at Comic-Con to dictate what's popular with people. But that kind of got blown away when movies like Scott Pilgrim versus the World did so well at Comic-Con and kind of failed at the box office in the mainstream. I mean, even though it has a lot of attention and it has a lot of people going and it has a lot of sites going and reporting on it and news organizations, it's dialed back from whether or not it's actually going to impact actual box office in the real world. But there's a couple things I want to look into. I don't think Marvel's doing anything spectacular there because what are they going to do? They already have marketing in place for Infinity War, the next movie coming out next summer. Everyone wants to know how things happen. And Marvel's not stupid. They're not going to go out there and pretend that they're going to tell you something about Infinity War and then just promote Captain Marvel, which comes out in March. The big one is the DC movies. I'm looking forward to see what comes out from the DC movies, stuff like Aquaman. You got the Wonder Woman movie coming up. You got Shazam coming up. Those are the ones that I think we're going to get some interesting information on the Predator and some early footage. That's kind of a smaller but like more immediate release. And then the other one that I'm really interested in seeing everything that comes out of it is Doctor Who. We've got a new Doctor Who, and she's hot, and I can't wait to see what they're doing with her. I hope we get some footage with her being the Doctor, as opposed just, like, they did a teaser shot, and it was just her walking on the screen again, which is nothing, okay, I know what she looks like. I know what she looks like in her outfit. Let's see her be the Doctor. I want to see if she can achieve that. That's what I'm looking forward to. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quickly about the box office. It was a little bit of a stumble for Dwayne Johnson this past weekend. Hotel Transylvania 3 actually topped the box office. And some people were wondering if it wouldn't do better than Ant-Man and the Wasp. Ant-Man and the Wasp actually dropped quite a bit, but it's still doing well. I mean, I've always said the Ant-Man movies aren't ones that are ubiquitously huge. And we're getting to the point where the Marvel movies, like the one-off movies, people are like, oh, I don't need to see Ant-Man. Let's face it. You don't need to see Ant-Man to watch Avengers in May of next year. Hotel Transylvania 3 did really well, $44 million, which is on par with the other releases, and they kept the budget down, so it's going to be a profitable movie. And, you know, hey, they might be able to roll that all the way into October, or they'll probably have a DVD or Blu-ray release in October. But Skyscraper actually came a little soft, just under $25 million, which is kind of low. But the reality is they know this is just made for the overseas market. It's kind of like Rampage. Rampage was not that huge of a movie for Dwayne Johnson in the States, but worldwide it did quite well. It's like the XXX movies with his buddy Vin Diesel. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week, I'm going to take an early look. This actually doesn't come out until next Tuesday, but you can get it on demand. And, of course, you can get ready to buy it on Tuesday, probably Monday night. and that is Ready Player One. In a dystopian future, players compete in a virtual reality world to win control of the tech company that runs the show.
The Oasis was the brainchild of James Halliday.
Hello. If you're watching this, I'm dead. I created a hidden object, an Easter egg. The first person to find the egg will inherit $500 billion and total control of the Oasis itself.
Who is this Parzival, and how the hell is he winning?
Find him. This isn't just a game.
This was a movie that I never read the book, and I heard all the buzz about it, and then I heard all the negative buzz, and you had backlash to backlash to backlash, where they're like, oh, this is just fan service, oh, this is just nostalgia, because it's really steeped in the 80s, and the movie knows it. Ernie Cline, who wrote it, knows it. Steven Spielberg, who directed it, knows it, and he knows that there's stuff that Steven Spielberg contributed to the zeitgeist and contributed to pop culture that show up in the movie, like the T-Rex from Jurassic Park, which isn't from the 80s, it's from the 90s, or the DeLorean, which he was instrumental in doing, and like little bits from Back to the Future that are in H's garage. But this is a fun movie. I have to say, I rewatched it this weekend. I showed it to my folks who, you know, they're old. I mean, my dad's like 80. I won't say how old my mom is. She's younger than he is. But they enjoyed it. I mean, but I'll tell you, it is a visual feast. This is one of those movies that if you didn't see it on the big screen, you did miss out a little bit. This was the kind of movie that needs to be seen on the big screen. I wish I could watch it on IMAX with a pause button. There are so many Easter eggs. And I remember when I interviewed Ernie Cline back in March when this came out, he couldn't even tell me how many Easter eggs there are in the movie. Now, I'm not talking about the physical Easter eggs that Percival's going for. I'm talking about, well, I guess they're virtual Easter eggs because they're in the Oasis. But they're not the actual Easter eggs. They're like little bits and pieces and nods and characters and licensed elements and stuff. I don't know if they have all that information. He said he didn't know. He said that people just kept adding it. So this is a fantastic movie. I had a lot of fun watching it, and it is old school Spielberg nostalgia, but also excitement. And you compare it to something like Minority Report that he did, oh gosh, when was that? Like 99, 2000, where he was kind of stumbling and he was using Tom Cruise at the time. But even then, Minority Report's kind of tough to watch. Minority Report was one of those that was saturated and over-processed in terms of visual elements. That and like War of the Worlds. This is the period of time where Spielberg was still trying to figure out where he's going to fit in this new complete digital realm that he helped create. And he fully realizes it with Ready Player One. And it shows that he can still do movies like Lincoln. I know Lincoln was 6 years ago, but he can do a movie like Lincoln, and he can also do a movie like Ready Player One. This is a fantastic film. And you haven't seen it. There's a lot of cool stuff. Not only does the Blu-ray look fantastic, but you've got like 90 minutes of special features. They look back at the 80s, the inspirations to the 80s. You know, they take sort of like the general sort of behind the scenes look at the show. They look at the effects. They look at the score and the sound. And they even have a little bit of, you know, fun bits with Ty Sheridan, who plays Percival, or Wade Watts, and Ernie Cline, the writer, kind of, you know, looking back on stuff going to Austin, Texas, which isn't his hometown. That's not Ernie's hometown. Ernie's hometown's Ashland, Ohio, home of Grandpa's Cheese Barn. If you've driven up 71 between Columbus and Cleveland, you know what Grandpa's Cheese Barn is. So yeah, this is just a fun movie. It's a great Blu-ray. It's worth checking out. I liked it better the second time I saw it. I liked it better watching it. I mean, I wanted to see it again on the big screen because of the resolution, for a chance to see all the little bits and pieces and characters that I missed the first time around. But it's, you can at least freeze frame it and you can say, oh, hey, look, there's the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Batman and Hello Kitty. So I'm going to say that Ready Player One totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Now, the movies that are actually out this week that you can physically go get now are Rampage, which we talked about earlier, Dwayne Johnson. There's also Super Troopers 2, which has nothing to do with the Mamma Mia song. And Truth or Dare, Isle of Dogs, and I Feel Pretty. And that is it for this week. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Mission Impossible Fallout and Teen Titans Go to the Movies. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.